Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the team at 980. We are always live as well on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, and YouTube. It is a big day here at the show as we have all kinds of things going on. There's plenty happening around the NFL. We'll talk to Mike Jones about all the non-Commanders things in an hour. Diana Rossini has kicked up some dirt around the Terry McLaurin contract negotiations. Plus, Anthony, I don't know how to handle this because I can't have both you on the screen and the widescreen of my setup here at the same time. But it's also a big personal day on the show. It's not every day that one of your absolute best friends in the whole entire world is getting traded to your local basketball team. But Alicia Clark is headed back to the Mystics in a big trade that I will professionally say is much bigger than just Alicia. Wyatt goes down. We'll talk about that coming up. We might have a guest on it this hour. If not, we will get to it later in the show. But Brittany Sykes, who's also a friend of the show. We are losing an Orange, though. We are losing a fellow Syracuse alum, which is sad. But she's headed off to Seattle, and Alicia's coming back. Also, the Mystics get a 2026 first-round pick. So we will get into that later on in the show. But if you notice the different background today, it's because, what better reason could there literally possibly be for me to dust off this jersey, Anthony?
I mean, the news broke. She's coming back to D.C. Why not kick it off?
Yeah. The show like that. I will say, I also don't – this is not going to be an accurate jersey all of a sudden because Alicia wore 22 when she was here. And obviously, Sonia Citron has laid claim to that. And while Sony is the type of player that would just be like, yeah, I'll give it up, I don't think you can do that in the middle of the season. And I don't think at this point with where Sony is and the long future she has ahead here that she's going to change it up. So we will I can confirm. Sources confirm. Actually, source, the primary one, confirms. She has no idea what number she's wearing yet when she arrives. So we will talk some Mystics later on in the show. They have a big game against the Sky tonight. Sky are without Angel Reese, who's been banged up. So she is out for that game, but still have to deal with some other good players, obviously, that Chicago has, although they have been struggling. But we're going to start the show with what Diana Rossini had to say here in a few minutes on Beamich and Finley. But I'll just start with something that I thought was interesting that kind of led to Diana coming on, which is they relaunched their podcast, Scoop City. It's her, it's Chase Daniel. And obviously, Diana's super plugged in, and she knows people all around the league and agents and front office people, and I have no idea who she's talking to. But she advanced the story of the Terry contract holdout in a way that I kind of been waiting on. The kind of pull quote from the podcast and that she was pushing on social media is that the contract that DK Metcalf signed is absolutely something that Terry's camp is looking at, which we knew, but it's not like they're looking for an exact replica, and it might not be so much about the AAV or the APY. Those two terms are basically interchangeable. AAV, average annual value, APY, average per year, because that's the number with DK that's silly. The number with DK that's silly, that has him as a receiver in a different class than his pay suggests he is the AAV. He's not the fourth best receiver in football. He has the fourth highest AAV behind Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, and CeeDee Lamb. Jamar's at 40.5, I believe. Jetta's at 35. And then CD's, I think, at 33 and change or 34. I'm doing this all off the top of my head. 34. Thank you, Anthony. So you have those guys there. And then DK's at 33. And then Garrett Wilson just signed at 32.5, and on down the list you go. And as we've talked about it ad nauseum, including on Friday with a big fancy, you know, graphical inclusion on YouTube, where I pulled up DK's contract for everyone to see and the details, and laid out why his AAV number is so high, is because that final year is never going to happen. And this is very common. Often agents want that to be able to brag and be like, oh, I got my guy. I was actually listening to an old podcast that I've had queued up that I need to finish. Things went crazy today. But I've had it queued up since like June when it was recorded. I just never got the chance to listen to it. But Joel Corey, who's also been on the show, and I believe is coming on the show tomorrow, Anthony?
Yes, he is.
He was on with Robert Mays, and they did a super deep dive on the Athletic Football Show into the salary cap. And he brought up some other examples, like when Davante Adams signed what was, I think, written on paper as a five-year, $140 million contract with the Raiders that was actually like a two-year deal. DK's is like that. Man, the details are starting to come out on Courtland Sutton's contract. They can get out of that thing, Anthony, in 2026. It's 2025 right now.
Wow.
So it was, you know, presented as like a four-year, 90-whatever, and really it's like a one-year extension. It got him new money. It's a worthwhile extension for Sutton to sign at the age of 30. You get as much guaranteed money as you can now, and then you deal with the restructures and all that stuff later. And if somehow you play up to your number, maybe the team lets you earn that money. But realistically, that 33 number is one that Terry was never going to sniff, nevertheless get. And what it sounds like, and what we'll let you hear from Diana in a moment, is where there are some similarities in the contract structure and level-wise what Terry McLaurin might be looking for to DK Metcalf and why that 33 number might not be such a huge inhibitor after all. So that you'll hear the most important stuff from Diana Rossini's chat with B. Mitch and Finley, and we'll react to it next. Also still to come today, some of your phone calls later in the hour at 301-230-0980. We might have some take command for you today as well on why joint practices are so important. Again, Mike Jones from The Athletic coming up at 5 o'clock. Damon Amendolara also going to check in today. DA, our friend from SiriusXM satellite radio, who has like always, I can talk anything football with DA all the time. He's always got interesting takes and whatever. But the other reason I wanted to have DA on today is the Oakland Athletics are in town, even though they are no longer the Oakland Athletics. And I don't think anybody in national media has been more on top of the Oakland disaster and that the A's leaving than DA. He's done stuff. He like literally went out there and had like a event with listeners at one point in time. So as we're now more than halfway through the baseball season, and theoretically the A's are moving to Las Vegas soon, and they've been playing in Sacramento all year, and I haven't been following that story at all, DA has. So I want to hear from him. And also, it's fun to beat up on bad owners that are not ours, because we did that for a long time, and it's not as fun when it's your own owner. But John Fisher, the owner of the A's, certainly someone that DA has no love lost for. So we will get into that with DA at 5:30, plus some thoughts on the Terry contract situation, where he's at, where he sees it from his national point of view. And then at 6 o'clock, we will also get into some of our biggest questions about the joint practices tomorrow. Anthony and I will go back and forth, pick six style, on that. The Mystics trade stuff as well. Again, we might have a guest on that, still efforting that, but breaking news, you know how that goes. But next, 100% guaranteed, Diana Rossini. She was on B. Mitch and Finley earlier. We'll let you hear what she had to say next.
Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from Puck examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Offense Show. We're on the Team 980. We are always live as well on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, YouTube. At the Team 980 is where you find us there. Of course, you can search the Team 980 in any of those other places, and we'll just magically pop up, and you hit play, and then we're in your ears. It's, you asked for it. You did all that stuff. We didn't just magically show up there on accident. That'd be kind of weird if we did. Anyway, that got weird anyway. The point is, Anthony Haney, that Terry McLaurin would like a new contract. And Terry and his side and the Commanders and their side have obviously not been able to come to terms. And they are reportedly very far apart, and all of all the things that we've heard basically nonstop for months. And I also think one of the things that's funny about the reporting on all this is like, and nothing seems to have changed. And it's like, what, Terry, what are you supposed to get? Like, oh, Terry's side has gotten closer to not doing the deal. Or he's gotten closer, but they're not in agreement yet. I guess you could hear something like that, but like, nothing changes until it changes and then they agree on a deal. Because neither side, you don't want to come down and then watch the other side not move. And like, it'd be nice if you had maybe a better negotiation where maybe that was the case and each side was budging. But at the end of the day, like, you're probably not going to hear a lot about it changing or a lot about a lot until you hear maybe, oh, you know, they're talking, they're working out details, it's close, or it's done. And Diana Rossini been digging around on this, as is everyone else, the Athletic's senior NFL insider and host of Scoop City. And I listened to her and Chase Daniel talk about it. There wasn't a ton of new information, but the big thing is like, hey, there's not, it may not be the 33 APY or 33 a year average annual value that we think that Terry's side is hung up on that is actually the case. That was kind of the big nugget out of it. And as a result, when Diana joined JP and B. Mitch earlier today, the message was very similar to what we've heard. Matter of not if, but when, because it seems like both sides, while they might be far apart right now, ultimately do want to get a deal done.
And obviously the hold-ins are the story. And in Washington, it's all about Terry and where they're at, and you know, the question everyone wants to know is, where is it at? Is this getting done? And I continue to say the same thing that I'm sure you guys are saying as well, and other reporters talking to you about it, is, which is, everyone feels good this is going to get done. It's just really when and how close are they to striking a deal?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, that's what we're waiting on, is like, when is it going to? And so ultimately, it becomes a giant game of chicken, which is why Diana says this.
You know, so much of this is like, who has the stomach for it too? You know, I'm following with the Trey Hendrickson story, and I'm in touch with him talking about what he's doing. And, you know, I can just tell through his voice, it's hard. It's hard to do this. These guys want to be on the field. Terry wants, look at Terry, you guys are there every day with him. You see him. Like, he's a class act. He's a professional. He loves his team. He's all Washington all the time. Yes, he asked for a trade. But do we all really think Terry McLaurin wants to play somewhere else? No, of course he doesn't. And we know Washington wants him there just based on everything that he provides this offense, knowing that he's the number one weapon, and knowing all the other great stuff that fits into the culture of what Dan Quinn wants. And he is the poster child for what a commander should be. I think we could all agree. It's just, who's going to give here? Who's going to be willing to say, all right, Terry, you're not going to get the 32, 33, 34 top dollar right now, because the reality is you are 30 years old. But at the same time, Washington, you've got a quarterback on a very cheap deal. You're all in. You've got the vets signed up. They're ready to win. You went all the way to the NFC Championship game last year. You can do this year. Champagne problems. This is a good problem to have, and you got the money. Maybe you're willing to overpay a bit. So I think we're at that point where it's starting to feel like we're getting closer. I just can't report right now at this moment. Like, guys, any second. I don't think it's that close.
And that's very consistent with what we've heard, but I think it's well framed. Who can stomach it? And this is where I look at Adam Peters' past and the people that he's worked with in the past and go, I bet on Adam Peters. Now, Terry McLaurin is incredibly principled. But in part, it's like, what are you stomaching? If you're the Commanders, you're looking at your schedule and you go, okay, week one, we have the Giants. Respectfully, Anthony, I'm going to say this as nicely as I can. Respectfully, I think the Commanders can beat the Giants without Terry McLaurin. Is that overstating? I mean, look, the Giants defense is good. It's week one. You never know. I would prefer to have Terry McLaurin. But when we look at the ceiling of the team and how high it is and what they need to do to win the Super Bowl this year, I don't think clearing the bar of beating the Giants at home without Terry, if you can't do that, then you need to reevaluate a lot of stuff.
I'm not going to lie, Craig. I don't know if I necessarily agree.
I don't think they can beat – are the Giants better – I'm not saying the Giants can't win. But, like, Fast forward. I know you're not great at picking games. Sorry, that was a cheap shot. But when we, if it's week one and we're doing game picks.
Our games last year against the Giants were very, very, very competitive, Craig. These are divisional
games. They're division games.
Exactly.
I get it. I get it. But like from a talent standpoint.
On paper, it says that we should have blew them out both times last year. That didn't happen. And they had Daniel Jones. They had a worse quarterback last year. I think Russell Wilson is an upgrade. Their defense is pretty good. I think their front seven is pretty stout. It's going to be tough to run against. So we're going to need guys who can, you know, win and get open. I think the game's going to be tough.
Okay.
With or without Terry, it's going to be tough.
Okay. I think the Commanders are not going to be super sweating week one against the Giants if Terry decides to really push this. And again, I don't know what the exact, legalities are around this ankle injury. Mm-hmm. Because if he's like, well, I can't pass a physical, then, well, that's a problem. Because I don't think they're going to waive him, which they could. Remember, this money's not guaranteed. They could waive him, and he would get nothing. But then he would just go sign somewhere else and be a free agent, which, you know, is in a way like kind of helps him. It's like the one thing he's got from a leverage standpoint. But if he goes somewhere else and then immediately passes a physical, the Commanders would file a grievance and they'd be like, hello, you couldn't pass your physical here, but you could there. Like, what the hell is going on? Anyway, the point is, assuming that there's no funny business with the ankle, like they probably go out and win week one. You know, the offense is going to look okay, and Terry's going to miss out on like $800,000, I think, or his game checks, something like that. Like, how much money are you willing to miss out on? And so when it talks about what you're stomaching, it's like, okay, the team side, you're stomaching a short-term pain of not having the player and whatever distraction comes with it. For the player, you're sacrificing, like, massive amounts of money. And this is where, like, the fact that NFL players make gargantuan amounts of money becomes a huge factor, because no human being is like, or at least one that's not like a billionaire, is not going to be like, oh, $800,000. Like, that's a lot of freaking money. And nevertheless, you get 2 weeks in. Now you're over a mil and a half. You're just going to want to flush that down the drain? Hell no. And so that's why players give. Like, I know Ezekiel Elliott is like the one rare exception that, you know, he actually held out multiple games, and there's a couple others, but like guys don't go into the regular season for a reason. And so it does come down to this game of chicken and who's got the stomach for it. And I think that Terry has more of a stomach for it than a lot of pros, but also like at some point you look in the mirror and you go, who am I? And I think back, there's that epic speech he gave in the tunnel last year. When they turn on the film, I know what they're going to say about me. And that guy is eventually going to look in the mirror and go, I know what I want him to say about me. And I said, I was there for my teammates, that I was a great teammate, that I wanted to play football. I fought hard, you know, on a business front, but like I didn't push it too far. And I don't think that's a weakness. I think that's Terry's character, and you know, and that is a strength, that this is more than a business to him. And the other thing I'll say, too, in Terry's credit to his character, is like, I don't think this is about dollars. I think this is about respect. And as he said, it's about, in the NFL, the way you show respect is with dollars. So he feels like he's being disrespected. But if they can find a way to save some face, guarantee some extra money, get him a little bit of extra money this year, even if he winds up not signing a long-term extension, I do think that's a relevant way to go about this. The other thing that I would say is a possibility that I hadn't thought of until I was listening to that Joel Corey podcast earlier, from a couple months ago, is I wonder if they could rip up this year. Like, there's still some dead money that in this year and next year that would have to be counted. You can't get rid of that. But if part of the problem is extension and that pushes his age out, could they rip up this year, basically start over this year, give him a nice chunk of change this year, give him something expensive next year, and then by 2027, now you're now you're in a little bit more financial flexibility land if you're the Commanders. So another thing, we'll talk to Joel Corey about that tomorrow. It's very complicated.
I was about to say, didn't the Dolphins just do that to Minka? They gave him like an extra $2 million or something like that for this year.
Well, they could definitely rearrange stuff, but like I'm talking about basically, I don't know, ripping up the contract. There's some dead money. I like at that point you're really talking about kind of a 2-year extension versus a 3. Like it's at that point it's semantics to an extent, but again, because they have the money now and there's nothing else to do on this year's cap, like I would try to front load that contract in some on some level. All right. When we get back here on the Hoffman Show, joint practice tomorrow in New England. Why are joint practices so important, and some story time fun from my time covering them and Logan's time playing in them, Take Command style. Never been heard. Even if you're a Take Command subscriber, this is not out yet. So you get a special preview next here on the Hoffman Show.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At 5 o'clock... Coming up at 5 o'clock, Mike Jones of The Athletic, NFL Insider, joins us. There's a bunch of news that even just popped in the last like 5 minutes. We got which Browns quarterback is going to start in the preseason. We got a suspension in the NFC North for a top player. So we got all kinds of news notes. Plus, I know Mike's been down in Jacksonville. What do we make of the Jags putting Travis Hunter as a starting receiver and a second string corner on their initial unofficial depth chart? We'll get into all of that with Mike coming up in just a little bit. Right now, though, Take Command takes you to New England in our minds, because that's where the joint practice is going to be. Why have they become so important? And some fun story time. The full episode of Take Command will be out a little bit later on today, including more specific previews of the offense and the defense, and how they match up with the Patriots and the things that we're looking for. But a general overview of why tomorrow is such an important data point for Dan Quinn, Adam Peters and company right now on Take Command here on The Hoffman Show.
It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson and former Commanders beat reporter Craig Hoffman.
It is not hyperbole to say, Logan, that a lot of the kind of new wave of coaches, we'll call it the McVay-Shanahan era of coaches, those guys seem to really value joint practices more than preseason games. Why do you think that evolution has taken place?
So I think, you know, we've talked about this a little bit in years past, and I think a couple of things. One, it gives you more control, and I think that's ultimately what you're looking for, right? It's like if you're a coach, like sometimes in a game, right, you might not get a two-minute drill. You might not get a red zone drill. You might not get the third-string guy and the fourth-string guy a two-minute drive. And again, you're trying to evaluate them one-to-one, so how do I know, you know, if the situations are totally different, how they handle these opportunities? And so obviously when we're in a joint practice, I can go to, in this case, Mike Vrabel and be like, hey, Mike, like, I want to make sure that we get 2-minute. I want this kind of plays. This is why we want to do it. And then Michael say, okay, yeah, we can accommodate that, but can you give us, you know, team run or whatever it is? And once we've kind of worked all that stuff out, it helps us evaluate. So from a coaching standpoint, it gives us more control. And from an Adam Peters perspective or from a GM perspective, it lets you see guys from the other team. It lets you see guys from your team. It lets you see how real stuff is. Because I think that's another thing people forget in the preseason game. We're not actually like running real plays. It's like day one, day two install, like basic stuff. Here we can kind of open the bag a little bit more. It's not televised. Like they can't air any of the stuff. So we can kind of be a little bit more aggressive with what we want to show versus one opponent who we're not playing in the regular season. So I think there's a lot of advantages. And I think maybe the penultimate or the most important one is it helps keep your starting quarterback healthy. Like I think about like the New England Patriots when Tom Brady was there, they were in a joint practice, you know, all the time. Because it let Tom Brady see defenses, get the reps, but you couldn't touch him. So he always came out pretty healthy.
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the things that Joe Witt Jr. talked about yesterday, Monday, as we record this on Tuesday, for those that might be listening to it later, when he spoke to the media was, you know, it's about time for us to see some other guys. And it is not just like the frustration that we talk about with like fights and training camp and stuff like that of, you know, you just keep running your helmet into the same dudes over and over again. But I'll ask you to try to see if I can pry a story out of you. Is there a guy that you were a teammate with that was just a way better player than you, but you had his number because you just got to go against him in practice every day? And you're just like, yeah, I know how to block Ryan Kerrigan or Brian Arakpo or whoever, even though like, if you had been on another team and only got to see him once a season, you probably wouldn't have won that matchup as often.
Yeah, I think the one that first comes to mind is Ryan Kerrigan. Like, Ryan Kerrigan is a great player. You know, he's one of the best players in the franchise's history.
Franchise all-time leader in sacks, like, you know, ring of fame type of guy.
I'm not saying that like I ever like killed Ryan Kerrigan, but I did feel like I really understood how he played and like what technically I needed to do to be in the right position to make the day hard for him. So, you know, like he had like a very specific way he liked to lay his hands, and I knew my hands had to come up in a certain way, and I knew my footwork had to be just right. And I could see how if you were for a different team, like that would be really hard. You know what I mean? Like that would be really hard to deal with that over and over. But I had a thousand reps of this exact strike, of this exact step, of this exact pass rush. And over the course of how many years we play against you, 3-4 years, like you're like, I kind of feel really good about where he's at, you know, like what I need to do to get him. Same thing with like guys like Lorenzo Alexander when he was playing a stand-up edge. Like he would give people fits because he was so physical, but I kind of knew his line. I kind of knew where I needed to put my shoulders to kind of keep him out of the run. And that's in some ways, like it kind of bred a false confidence for me right. Going into these games, right? Because I'm like, oh, okay, I feel pretty comfortable, right?
But then you I can get block to see Ryan Kerrigan. I can block anybody.
But then you get to see somebody new, kind of to your point, and you're like, I don't know this guy as well. So it's funny. Like I was talking to Fred Smoot about this the other day, and like coming out of any joint practice that we did, so we had one against Houston and one against New England when I was here in Washington. I always felt like I was more ready for the preseason game because I had seen them more. I'd seen the guys I was going against. I kind of could watch some film, review some stuff, kind of get ready for the preseason game in a way that I couldn't prior. And I do think it helps with some of that stuff, the familiarity. And so I think like what Joe Wood Jr. is talking about is like, I don't want familiarity all the time. I want to see how you respond to that. Was the other, this is maybe even kind of a higher level point, is the thing that I got really comfortable with was the structure of our defense. So like, for example, when Jim Haslett was here, it was a 3-4 odd structure, right? So like you got the nose, the four eyes, the nines on the outside. And so I knew the exact calls versus that stuff. And so when you got to a four down, like what were the calls? Is this an overfront? Is this an underfront? Are there 2-3 techniques? Like what's the insertion path? Because you see that same pattern or you see the same structures all the time. So it kind of gets you as a coach or you as a veteran player, a joint practice is what I'm talking about, to see different stuff. So like, let's say I'm running a seam versus single high and our team's a single high team. Like I've run that rep 400 times in training camp, but now all of a sudden it's a 2-high team or it's a quarters team. And now my routes,
or they just run their single high differently. Like they bend coverages in a different way.
Correct. And so like, that's where this stuff becomes super important and it's like sneaky important. And like, and so like as a player, I always felt really uncomfortable in joint practices, partially because it was so new and I didn't have the comfort level and familiarity, but it's good for the coaches and the front office to see how people handle that variety.
Definitely. And because ultimately your job wasn't to be able to block Ryan Kerrigan.
Correct.
Your job was to be able to block whoever's across from you. And that's going to change week to week in the NFL. And so you have that opportunity to see, okay, Trey Amos is playing great against the Commanders wide receivers. How much of that is particular matchups or the quality of the Commanders wide receivers? And we can talk about that more in detail a little bit later, but it's stuff like that. And then I think the other point that you made that I want to really double click on here and go into a little bit more depth of why it's so valuable to have these joint practices versus the preseason game is you are not at the mercy of the randomness of a football game.
Correct.
Because you could have, you know, oh, we're going to play the offense one drive, but there's a weird tipped ball off a guy's helmet and now we're going out for a second drive because there's an interception, or a guy just dropped the ball in open space and there's a fumble. Obviously, if you want to get situational work, you're not going to play your offense for a drive, pull them out and hope you get a 2-minute at the end of the half and then put them back in for the 2-minute. Like that's just not how you do things. Like once you're out, you're out. A lot of those guys go and take the pads off. So the fact that you're able to get the situational work, and especially when we know that's something that Quinn values at an extraordinarily high level, you can get it ones on ones. You can engineer what you want and then be competitive. And like you said, do all of that with the safety of Jaden Daniels in a in a yellow safety jersey, as opposed to having him out there and exposed to the elements.
And I think the other thing too, kind of to piggyback off of that, that I haven't really experienced until I started coaching high school football, and they have these like preseason scrimmages, is it lets you see kind of if this new thing you're trying works, right? So like, yeah. You know, let's say I want to bring a new pressure, or I want a new, you know, side adjust on the perimeter for the offense, or I'm trying a new run, and it's killing our defense, right? Because our offensive line really knows how to block it versus defense, or it's killing our defense because, you know, like we understand how Cliff Kingsbury calls the protections. And then all of a sudden we go up to, you know, New England, we call it and it gets stuffed. And it's like, oh, maybe this wasn't as good as we thought, or, oh, I didn't think that they could do this. Like, let me get on the whiteboard and like rule this out. So I do think like that stuff is also really important, because I'll tell you, like, I played in a bunch of probably, now that I'm thinking about it, like almost 40 preseason games in my career. And one of the things is that the game plan's never complicated. Even in the third preseason game, or the old third preseason game, now the second preseason game where the starters are playing, it's not complicated. So, and I'm not going to show the good stuff. I'm going to keep all that stuff close to my vest. But now I can, like, Joe Witt Jr. can throw that pressure and be like, oh, they blocked this differently. They got in a full slide. Like, what do we want to rule out here? So, or how do we want to rule our blitzes versus a full slide, as an example? So I think that stuff, again, just letting you do more stuff, letting you kind of explore the offense more, get ahead of that curve a little bit, is super, super critical for these joint practices. And again, as a player, I despise them. I couldn't stand them. But as a coach, as an evaluator, as an analyst, it helps with all, like, giving context to everything you're doing offensively and defensively.
Why couldn't you stand them? Was it just like you were someone who learned quickly and could take advantage of the repetitive nature of it, and you there was a randomness that it was like, oh, this, I am not in control anymore?
I think that's probably part of it, for sure. Like, that's actually, now that you mentioned, I had never really been that self-reflective, honestly, but that for sure is why. Because I could pick up the defense really well. I knew the coverages. I'd actually study the installs from last year. You know what I mean? Like, I'd be that ahead of it. So it's kind of psycho stuff, but I was trying to make the team, so I'm not going to.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say. Just real quick, because Will Compton was the same way. Like, he would get the installs and know it was coming. And then it was really easy for him to play middle linebacker because he was shooting fish in a barrel, but he was trying to make the team. And I kind of respect the resourcefulness there as opposed to playing it straight.
Yeah. And so, like, I could do that. But also, I think the thing that I found most frustrating about joint practices is the tempo. Like, what is the tempo of practice? Like, when you're practicing with your team, you know the tempo. I understand this is how this person's going to go. This is how I'm going to go. They know that. And then when I get to a new team and I'm going through the whistle like I do in practice, everyone gets irritated. Everyone gets pissed off, right? Or you get a guy like in a walkthrough drill. Like, I remember doing this with Houston. Like, we were doing kickoff and it was supposed to be live special teams to kind of get reps, but the wedge was dead. And I was like, okay. So like we went, we did our reps. We kind of locked arms and ran in and no one got hit in the wedge. And then our group went and somebody didn't hear that they were dead if they went to the wedge, and freaking annihilated, like straight harpooned somebody in the wedge. And everyone got mad, but I was like, I don't want to be that guy getting harpooned. Like, when I'm expecting you to stop, like, so there's always this anxiety in these periods because, like, this one's live, this one's not. We're tackling the ground here. We're not tackling here. The practice structure changed a little bit. And that kind of uncertainty, like, not of the personnel or the scheme, but of the how hard are we going? Right. And I was talking to Dan about it. It's like, this is not a game. It's a practice, but you're another team. So this feels like it should be a game. It's like, you know, like a racehorse. It's like you can't like just jog a racehorse out. Like, they're going to sprint, right? They're going to run the lap as fast as they can. And so now it's like you're asking that racehorse to be in between sprint and walk, and they haven't really practiced that. And that's how I felt oftentimes in those joint practices. And I think that's oftentimes why you get these big fights, because you get these guys together and it's like the tempo is not clearly defined. The coaches aren't abiding by the tempo. And then all of a sudden it's like my favorite example, when Houston came up here, I remember the first day of joint practice, we kind of got after him a little bit. Like, we ran the ball well. We completed every ball. Like, we had a really good day. And then, you know, Jay had said that he had talked to Bill O'Brien, and Bill O'Brien said, it doesn't matter about winning the day. We're not going to worry about that. But they were on Hard Knocks. So 2 weeks later, you see Bill O'Brien in the training camp being like, this is nonsense. You guys are terrible. Like, he didn't say those words. He was a little bit more.
He used the HBO language.
And you guys got your butts kicked. So the next day they come out and they lay one on us, right? And so I was like, man. And so we go into the meeting, and then all of a sudden Jay's saying, oh, they beat your butt, whatever. And then so that third day is an absolute like atomic
bloodbath, which is why nobody does 3 days of joint practices anymore.
Yeah, right. Because it's like one and done, man. If you didn't get it done, we're moving on. So, but again, like that's where like I talked to Dan about this the other day for our pre-practice interview. And he's like, you got to trust the other coach, right? You got to trust that their messaging is going to be the same as your messaging. You're trying to get the same thing out of it. Because if somebody's trying to win the day, you're gonna let a bunch of alpha males out on the field and they're going to do alpha male stuff and you're going to get a huge brawl and that's not productive for anybody.
Yeah, I think you have to approach it with like, hey, we're trying to win the day and it's okay if they win the day too. We are trying to get stuff out of it. There is no scoreboard. It's practice. The goal is to get better. And then pray that that is actually how that plays out. The joint practice fights, everyone knows they're coming. That's why you typically now don't even see 2 days. Like you just see the 1 day. I mean, I was there for the Jets practices in 2018 where the fight like started kind of on the like on the left side of the field, like left hash, and it's kind of coming towards us and we're on. And so it's like moving towards the hill where the fans are in Richmond, as you remember the Richmond setup down there. And so the media, we're all kind of watching it and we're like, time to start moving. Everybody pick up their chairs. They're coming our way. Trent Williams is trying to punch people. I don't need to be anywhere near that and moving out of the way. But that one was scary in part because it spilled over into the crowd. And it's like, you know, you're getting up on, it's like, hey, everybody move. Football players are punching each other in the head. Dude's swinging helmets. There was one player who has an identity I will keep private because I don't think I was supposed to know this, but he absolutely smashed a fridge to pieces after he was dragged off the field. Got to see a good photo of the broken Gatorade fridge after that. I think I don't know whether he punched it or he smashed a helmet through it, but it was carnage. But yeah, like dudes get upset because you're out there being super competitive. And if you're not in and I think that point that you made about why you don't like the practices also leads directly to the fights, right? Yeah. It's like, if you're a competitor and you agree, especially two football players, like y'all compete and bash each other's heads in all the time.
Right.
As long as you agree that that's what the terms are, that's fine. But if dude's expecting like a C level of physicality and you bring a B, that's going to cause some beef and hopefully they can avoid that. Do they have a special meeting? We made this joke on the radio show yesterday, Logan, but I will bring this joke that maybe isn't a joke to you. Do they bring a special meeting or hold a special meeting with Marshawn Lattimore to emphasize the no fighting, especially with Stephon Diggs?
I don't think so. I think it's just a general meeting. Like if I'm Dan, I'm going to address it. Like, because every year we had a joint meeting about every year that I did a joint practice, you have a meeting like, hey, fights won't be tolerated. You miss a day of practice, like all those kind of things. And I remember with the Patriots, like Bill Belichick, like he gave the speech. He brought both teams up and like gave a speech. Like we were all New England Patriots. And, you know, like there were times where like I really wanted to fight in that practice because they were doing stuff that I didn't think was very fair. And it was funny talking to the New England guys because they were like, oh yeah, this is every day. It's a defensive driven team. Like a great example I was talking to Tan about, he remembers this a little bit too. It's 7-on-7 and they would bring two extra guys over. So now it's 9-on-7. So it's the tight end in a 3-point stance, the outside linebacker would just, instead of rushing the passer or stopping the run, would literally just like jam or press you right in the shoulder and you'd have to rip through it. And then the middle linebacker, who was Devontae Hightower, would come over and it was like a clean earshot to your face. You know what I mean? And so you just would smash between these two guys. So the two inside routes are dead, right? And then the outside guys were like Browner and some other guy. And it was just PI. The refs would throw flags. It'd be pass interference. And the next play would be exactly the same thing. So 7-on-7 was nothing. So you're like, I want to fight everybody here. But you're like, I don't want to miss practice either. You know what I'm saying? So like getting that cleared up, I think is also helpful. But yeah,
so you went and drop kicked Bill Belichick. So that was the solution.
I have a definitive memory of running like power load later in practice on the same day. And I have never in my career blocked power load as hard as I blocked this play. It was like, basically like I was the wing player and I'm blocking back to the backside inside linebacker. And I didn't even look at the defensive end. I just sprinted as hard as I could and ear-holed this poor linebacker, who's probably like a, you know, undrafted free agent, and just de-cleated him. And no one said anything to me. But I was like, this is my fight today. I don't know who you are, but you just wore every bit of frustration that I had from this practice today. And the last
Do you have the film from that?
I don't know. No, I don't have it, but I probably could track it down.
I would like that. I just, if you can track that down, I just want you to send that to me. I'm going to get a Logan Paulson text message, one attachment video, and I'm just going to jump it up and down on the couch. I want to see Logan ear hole some UDFA. Then I want to figure out who it is, and then we'll have him on the podcast.
Want more from Craig and Logan? Subscribe now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. More Hoffman Show next on the Team 980 and the free Odyssey app.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.